Hello, I'm Travis Mills, and I make westerns. Thank you for listening to our podcast. In 2020, I made 12 western feature-length films in 12 months. Now I continue to explore the genre on set and off set in this podcast about the western genre and filmmaking process, featuring special guest interviews and more. This podcast is produced by 5J Media and brought to you by Running Wild Films. This music is composed by Christopher Hart from the soundtrack for our Western Counting Bullets. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple, and coming soon we will have a video version on our Running Wild Films YouTube channel. Now for our latest episode, but first a message about one of our sponsors. Welcome to our first episode, and we have quite a special guest, Jeff Dawn. You may have not heard his name, but you've certainly seen it in the credits of many, many films that you've seen, including Terminator, Terminator 2, Predator, The 13th Warrior. The list goes on and on. I had the honor last year in October and November to work with Jeff on Terror on the Prairie, a new Western. And we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about his own legacy and the legacy of his family. So without further ado, here is Jeff Dawn.
Hello, Travis. Thank you very much. So what an honor to be the first person that's on this podcast with all the people that you've known and worked with and worked for you, all the powerful actors and producers and talent out there. I am very honored.
Well, you know, thank you for doing this. You know, our experience talking together on set, you were one of the first people that came to mind, certainly. And I'm very, very grateful that you would do this. So, I want to start by talking about your long legacy, the family legacy in the movie business, right? Because that's something that's unique about you, is that your whole family, or many, many members of your family, have been involved in Hollywood for years, starting with your grandfather, Jack Dawn. And you had mentioned to me that he'd worked on The Wizard of Oz, but I started looking into more of his films, and he was a makeup artist on some of my favorites, so I wanted to name a few. John Ford's They Were Expendable, Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland, a bunch of westerns including The Devil's Doorway, Annie Got Your Gun, The Big Trail with John Wayne. So what can you tell me about Jack Dawn, your grandfather and the first makeup artist in the family?
Well, unfortunately, Jack died before I was born, so I don't remember him. But, of course, I know of all the stories. You know, there's a legacy there that you certainly learn when you're being raised by a father who is a makeup artist. And his father, Jack Dawn, was a makeup artist. What I've learned about Jack is that he was an artist and a cowboy in Kentucky. He was a good old boy, but he was very good with his art. He could sculpt and draw and paint, and he was very good. And he came out to Hollywood with his horse and started working on silent films as an extra. And he would come along with his horse, and they found that he could be anything. Oh, you want a Native American Indian? Okay, he would come with long hair and paint himself up to look like a Native American. You want somebody from India? You want a miner with a big beard? Whatever you want, he would create himself into this and show up. And suddenly all the producers and directors and cast started looking at this, and this was in the early days when there weren't many makeup artists at studios. You had actors and actresses doing their own makeup. So Jack would help the other actors as an extra do their makeup and create these various characters, and people noticed, and he just moved right up through the ranks. He ended up running the makeup department at MGM Studios for a total of 15 or 20 years. Did over 100 films responsible for them, including Wizard of Oz. So, and then my father came along. He was a World War II fighter pilot, a P-38 fighter pilot, very decorated. He came back and suddenly he was, you know, the war hero working for his dad, sweeping floors, because that's how you started back then. You start off as, you know, with like an intern. And I remember he told me a story. He said that his dad called him in because he was late. And he said, Bob, I'm going to send you home. Why? You know, I'm just late for a few minutes. He goes, I know. Can't have that here. I don't care if you're my son. He said, I'm sending you home today. If you're late again, I'm going to send you home for a week. And if you're late a third time, you're not coming back. That's tough love. It's not the way. Yeah, that's not the way I raise my kids, but that's always in the back of my head of, okay, you know, you got to sometimes, as a parent, you got to be a little brutal at times, and you it's easy to spoil your children and to tell them how proud you are and how much you love them. It's really tough to tell them no. It's really tough to teach them the brutality of the life that's ahead of them.
So, you know, you mentioned that there was a time when most of the actors were doing their own makeup, right? Which reminds me of my own films, because sometimes that's been the case with some of my smaller budget films.
I've seen so many of your photos. They look fantastic. Whatever makeup you guys are doing, that's, you know, you're humbling me.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. We've had some good makeup artists, but sometimes, you know, we've had to do it ourselves. Do you know when the industry started shifting and makeup started being a bigger, I guess, priority for the studio productions? Do you know about that history by chance?
That's a good question, and I should know that. Me, of all people, should know that. But I would have to go back and I would look at when all the studios, the Fox and the Paramount and MGM, Warner Brothers, all of those started having their own makeup department with their director of makeup. Was it, you know, in 1915? Was it in 19, you know, because I think that's the year that my grandfather started at MGM Studios. Yeah. So it was probably about that time, I'm guessing. Before that, not so much. After that, each studio said, well, this is what we need to do. You know, if we have an old age makeup and we're putting $1 million into this film with these big actors, we have to be guaranteed that it's going to be the best possible. And not just hope, because if you have somebody like a Lon Chaney was fantastic with his own makeup. There are a few actors and actresses that were quite good with their own makeup, but for the most part, when it came to advanced makeups, you had to go with a professional.
Right. Well, that was around the time that feature film started to be a big deal with Birth of a Nation and then onwards. So you're probably right about that being the kickoff of makeup departments. Let's talk a little bit more about your dad, because I was looking at his resume too. Again, amazing. Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho and Marnie, John Frankenheimer's Black Sunday, John Carpenter's Christine, I guess was his last film. It was dedicated to him. And then in terms of Westerns, Wichita with Joel McRae, which is one of the best Wyatt Earp movies, in my opinion, and The Missouri Breaks. Now, we talked about The Missouri Breaks because it was also shot in Montana, and we were in Montana. You remembered the filming location and you visited it again, correct?
Correct, yes. I was 16 years old when my father did it in the mid-70s. And I had very vivid memories of it. It was with Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson, a couple of rather infamous names now. And they were perfectly nice to me. I was this kid. I was the son of the makeup artist. And typically actors and actresses like the makeup and hair people because we're in their space. We're touching their face. You know, we see them at the best and the worst in the morning. We hear their stories. There is a trust that you have to convey to them that you're not going to be sharing this information. It's like the hairdresser, you know, the barber that you're going to tell them everything. So actors and actresses typically treat makeup and hair people quite well. There are exceptions, but that's typically the case. And I went up there and I just had a blast. I stayed with my dad for about a week. We were in a Virginia city out of Ennis, Montana, a very, very small, extremely historic town. And the town was, because it was on the historic registry, they couldn't touch it. And back then, the rooms were still filled with furniture and clothing and things like they walked away from this town in the 1800s. And since then, dozens of films and TV projects have been filmed there because it's so authentic. It's not a movie ranch that has facades that are fake on the backside. These are full-on log cabins with full-on furniture and, you know, working fireplaces and everything. So it was fun to go back there and see that.
I bet. Yeah, I was able to visit it with our costume designer for Terror on the Prairie. She was working there. So me and Michael Polish, the director of the film, we went once. It was very cool. It reminded me a lot of Tombstone. I don't know if you've been to Tombstone.
I have. Yes.
Very similar. What did you learn most from your dad growing up and seeing him work in the business?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody's ever asked me that before, but it's good because, all right, how much do you learn from a professional level that you use every day? And how much do you learn from a personality, an emotion? how to handle situations, how to work with people from your father or both your parents. And I have to say he helped me a great, great deal. My father was very respected in the business. He was excellent with beauty as well as special effects makeup. He was known for his special effects. He won an Emmy for Mission Possible, the series that he did for many years. And he did a lot of big makeup effects films. So I was fortunate to learn that from him. I learned something as simple as when he was training me in the garage in Napa, California, after he was semi-retired, and I was living up there and learning from him, he would say, okay, how much longer for that beard? And I'd say, oh, 20 minutes. And he'd say, now, be sure to give me an accurate estimate because you're going to have assistant directors and production assistants asking you throughout your career, and you don't want to get a reputation of not getting these times right. So if it's going to be 30 minutes, let me know. If you can do it in 15 minutes, let me know, but you've got to stick to that. So little things like that. He was so easygoing and liked by so many people. I know that I can be that person as well as be a little bit harder and tougher on my crew at times. But not as tough as his dad was on him, clearly. But, you know, as a department head, I've only pretty much been the department head. The department head hires a crew. You end up making up some of the crew, some of the cast, depending on how much time you have. You're responsible for the budget, for the design, for a lot of things. So I haven't worked for people so much. I've always been the boss. And you've got to really, you know, figure out how to communicate, how to be strong yet supportive, how to give support to your crew, and how to let them know it's not cool, you know. And the biggest thing that I try to tell people when I lecture about department heading is a typical scenario is you walk out on the set with an actor and actress that has a particular look, a makeup. It can be wounds, age, beauty, whatever. And the director looks at that person and goes, fantastic, Jeff. That looks fantastic. Well, if I didn't do the makeup, I want to have the makeup artist there so that I can say, thanks, Bob. It was Mary right here that actually did the makeup. So you're not only thanking Mary, but you're thanking her publicly in front of the director, in front of other crew members. You know, you're not just, hey, director, you know, she did it, but don't tell anybody. And at the end of the day, who's going to, you know, you're going to get hired again because of the overall look of the film, how you handled the show. You're not going to, that doesn't take anything away from me that another makeup artist has done a fantastic job, possibly better than I could even do, because it only reflects positively on me at the end.
Yeah, that's great. I think I really like what you said about the timing thing, because I know myself as a director, when I ask a makeup artist, how long is it going to take? I want the truth, right? If they tell me 10 minutes and they know it's going to take 20, that ends up being very frustrating because it's how am I going to use that time that I'm waiting for them to be done? You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's a great lesson that he taught you.
Yeah, the difference could be if I say 10 minutes, you're going to wait, and so is the whole company. If I say 30 minutes, hey, we can get this insert, or we can turn the camera and get that shot.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more a little bit more about your process as a department head, because I think that's something that a lot of people just don't understand. That, you know, like a lot of the industry, that they're not exposed to all of this information. First, though, I do want to talk about one more member of your family who's part of this incredible makeup legacy, and that's your uncle, Wes. Again, the credits are outstanding. Some of my favorites, A Boy and His Dog, Carrie, Urban Cowboy, Red Dawn with the great John Milius, Die Hard, Hunt for Red October, two McTiernan movies. And then, of course, you worked together on Flight of the Intruder, which I just watched again the other night. So what was that like? How did you guys end up working together? What was he like? And you know, what are some lasting impressions of Wes?
My Uncle Wes was definitely the most liked, most easygoing, most helpful human being in our family. I mean, he always had somebody living at his house that he was helping. And, you know, and it might have been an extra. Wes passed away of asthma at 51 years old in 1983, which was very unfortunate. I was visiting him at the time and actually found him. But it surprised me because you're not supposed to die at 51 years old, you know. And Wes I had so many people over the next few years come up to me with tears in their eyes many times. There was a little person that was an extra and a photo double for a kid on a film that he did many years ago. And he worked with me. And he said, "Jeff, I worked with your father. And I got to tell you something. Your father drove me back and forth to work every day for a long time because I didn't have a car. You know, or Wes did. And he took care of me for all of these times. And he never told anybody about it. You know, I stayed at his place at times." And I've heard that kind of story over and over about Wes. And, you know, am I capable of that? Absolutely. I love to help people like that. But Wes was a magnet for that. He would just have these fallen souls show up. And he was married. And, you know, he had a couple of grown daughters. And he had his own career. And he had his interest. He was a race car driver. And he loved doing that. But he always found time to help people. And so that is something that's really helped me quite a bit. When my dad passed away early on, and I wasn't in the union yet, Wes started hiring me. He started finding ways, because I was into special effects makeup. Back in the 80s, there weren't that many makeup artists that could do prosthetics. I could, because my father taught me. So Wes was able to get me on all of these different projects, Let's Get Harry in Mexico, several films. And I got my union days on this. And when I finally passed my union test, Wes came to me with tears in his eyes. And he said, "Jeff, you know, your dad was staying at my house working on Christine when he passed away. And he told me, if anything happens to me, I really need you to promise me you're going to help Jeff. The kid's got some talent. He's hungry to do this. But it's hard getting in the union." And he's like, "Of course, Bob. Well, you know, nothing's going to happen to you. It'll be fine. You'll be there to help him." Well, my dad passed away not long after that. And Wes then told me this, like I said, with tears in his eyes. So Wes was extremely supportive and helpful for me to get my foot in the door. I mean, I'd already done films like Terminator 1 and To Live and Die in L.A. and Teen Wolf and some other things, but I wasn't in the union yet. So Wes was very instrumental in helping me do that. So that's why in my speech, winning the Academy Award, I said I'd like to give special thanks to the two people most responsible for me being up here, Bob and Wes Dawn, the late Bob and Wes Dawn. Well, you're not supposed to thank people that are, you know, but who gives a shit? There's a billion people watching right then. This was a gut feeling that I didn't want to thank anybody else. We had Stan Winston, who I'm also very thankful for, who won the Academy Award at the same time. So he thanked James Cameron and Arnold Schwarzenegger and his crew and even my crew. I really needed to thank my uncle and my father, because they're the ones that got me through the door.
I watched that speech the other day and I loved that. I loved that it was so short and sweet, genuine, sincere. You know, you could tell that, you know, those were the two people for you. So thank you for sharing those memories about Wes and your dad. I really appreciate it. What do you think it is that has attracted, you know, the four of you, that attracted the four of you to makeup? You talked about Jack being an artist and a sculptor. And, you know, obviously you're influenced by what your parents do, but this feels like so much more than just taking the job of your father. It feels like there's something really in you guys that's leading you towards this makeup creation.
Yeah, that's also a good question, because, you know, there is nepotism here, of course. I thought nepotism was going to get me through the door easily. It goes back to when I was living in Napa. I was working, doing construction, and my history is building cabinetry, finished carpentry. I still do a lot of that. It's a huge passion to me, is to build and fix stuff. And I was living up there, and I thought, you know, I think I want to be a makeup artist. I'd helped my father for years on and off in the lab. His lab was always the garage. We would have actors come in and do life casts and the sculpting and the mold making and all of that. I was very involved with being a lab guy for years with my father. But my father always used to say, "You don't want to do this. You know, get your engineering degree. Get your, you know, be a pilot like he was. Do whatever you want to do. Don't get in the film business. And I never spoke deeply with him about it, but I'm sure it was because he knew how brutal the business could be. It's very tough on the family. You know, I tell people that I make about the same money as the gardener, not the gardener, but the plumber or the auto mechanic that I hire. The difference is they work 8 hours and I work, you know, I mean, when I was on Hawaii 5-0 for 10 years, I averaged through my Social Security 84 hours a week. That's the kind of hours you put in as a makeup department head. It's brutal. And needless to say, the family and your friends and yourself, they suffer. But, I mean, it's a wonderful career, the travel, the lives that you lead and live, the people that you get to know, the money that you can make. So it's a tough one to say, all right, I'm going to do less of this and spend more time with my friends and family. And my father knew that this is not a good thing for me to have to figure out. Just keep me out of the business, get into something else, and, you know, and have that life. So I never thought of it seriously. When I finally decided I wanted to do it, I went to my Uncle Wes. And he said, yeah, I'll help you. I told him, he knew all about it. He goes, you know, let's just see if you're right for it. So I worked with him on and off shows, just watching and helping, learning makeup. And finally, I was scared to death. And I went to my dad and I said, Dad, I have thought about this a great deal. I have studied. I have worked at it for the last 6 months. Wes has helped me. I really, really want to be a makeup artist like you and like your father. And he, without hesitation, went, fantastic. I'll help you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm sure he could see your passion. So you talked a little bit about how you got into the business. You learned prosthetics, right? And you started working on these films, and Wes and your dad were helping you out. We'll talk about your first big projects. But first of all, I want to get back to the craft a little bit. You talked about the being a makeup department head. Who all is on the makeup team, first of all? And what do you look for when you hire those people?
Typically what happens is a film will reach out to me in the way of a producer that I've worked with, a production manager that I've worked with, an actor I've worked with, or a director. These are the people that have the power. And although I have a strong resume now, you don't get hired off your resume still, because when you're in a position to say, I want this person for makeup department head or for head of special effects or wardrobe designer, you're in the position to fail if they fail. If you're the unit production manager and says, I love using this person, and they succeed, then you look good. If they fail, you don't look so good. So you have to have a history with these more powerful people to get the job in the first place. Of course, when I worked with Arnold, it was just automatic. People knew that I was going to be the makeup department head on the show. And even then, it was a battle at times, because they'd say, well, no, you'll do Arnold, and we want somebody else to be the makeup department head. And I had to fight this battle many times, because most, not all, but most makeup and hair people that work with stars only work with them. From day one, whether it was The Rock or Arnold or whoever, I would say, this is how I do this. I run the show. I am busy with a show. You're always my first priority, but there will be times that I have to step away because I have something big coming up. I have to do a test, or I have to coordinate something, or I have to oversee something. So I won't always be here with you. And not a lot of actors can handle that. But that was my, you know, if they didn't work with them, I wouldn't have worked with them again. Because department heading is so much bigger and more fulfilling to me than just taking care of an actor. You know, if it's a Terminator 2 or 3 or something like that, then your main actor is very time consuming because you've got hours a day of prosthetics on them. But most films that I do with actors that I brought in with that actor, they represent 5 or 10% of my responsibility. It's the overall picture that is so important. Keeping the director happy, keeping production happy with the cost of everything and time, because time is money, big time in the film business. And as makeup artists, we have the ability to really screw with camera. If they say, camera ready at 7 a.m., you better have all your actors there at 7 a.m. Because if the crew is waiting of 100 people for 30 minutes because you didn't have your act together, you have wasted tens of thousands of dollars and possibly not getting your day's work done. So it's a big responsibility that way, because you have the say of what's on camera as well as the cost. And also, I've had directors come to me and say, Jeff, let me know how the actors are doing, okay? They basically want you to spy, which I go, look it, I'll tell you when things are good. I'm not going to tell you when things are bad. You know, I'll give you positive feedback on happy, good things, but you're never going to hear me go, oh boy, Bob or Mary or whoever is in a really shitty mood today. Stay away from them. That's not my job, to be a spy. It is our responsibility to make sure the cast is not only ready on time, looks right, but also steps out of the trailer feeling happy, positive, and confident. You know, not beaten down and with all kinds of rumors and things stuck in their head. I'm completely against rumors, and I shut them down in the trailer every time I hear one. I will literally stop somebody and go, excuse me, were you there for that? No, I wasn't, but I heard. No, no, no. Let's not talk about that here. So that's part of a department head. The schedules, the timing. I may say to a first assistant director, you know, if we shoot this a different way than it's scheduled, you're going to save 30 minutes of makeup time. I do this all the time. And they'll say, oh, great, I see what you mean. Thank you. Yeah, we'll do that. That way we're only waiting 20 minutes instead of 45 minutes or so for a makeup or hair change. So it's my responsibility to make it as efficient as possible, like a first AD. And I always tell ADs, I say, you know, I'm basically an AD that's pretending to be a makeup artist because I have my own walkie-talkies. Assistant directors don't like makeup and hair people to have walkie-talkies because they're worried that that walkie-talkie will be open, meaning turned on, in the makeup trailer, sitting there on the counter, and the first assistant director go, where the hell is that actor? Get their ass out here now. I'm tired of waiting for him. And then the actor hears that. Ooh, bad news for the first assistant director. So I have to tell them, look, it's a headset. Nobody ever has an open walkie in the trailer. I guarantee you the protocols and the training I'm giving my crew, this will never happen. So it's important to listen to that. I heard that Bruce Willis, I know that Bruce Willis has in his contract that he gets a walkie-talkie that he keeps in his trailer. You think that scares some of the assistant directors? It's like, shit, Bruce is listening to every word we say.
So you hire the, obviously, the additional makeup artist. I assume that you have input into the hairstylist as well and special effects makeup, or is that completely separate?
Yes and no. In the old days, the old school was the makeup department head also did special effects makeup, like my father, and I certainly have done my share of it. Now, because of time, because of cost, because of the intricacy and the timing and such, we hire out to makeup effects labs. And I'll even bring in makeup specialists that are experts at airbrushing or hair work or, you know, prosthetics or whatever, fantasy. And although I've done it all and love to do it, I just have to coordinate that because I only have so much chair time in the makeup trailer. But yes, I oftentimes hire the hairdresser. A few years back, it was the makeup department head, and then that person, man or woman, would hire the hairdresser, and it was called the head hairstylist. Then they upgraded head hairstylists to hair department heads. But it's still a lot of times I end up hiring. It's rare. I've maybe been hired once or twice by a hairstylist, and I've probably hired 30, 35 hairstylists myself. And then makeup effects labs many times, you know, sometimes like on Terror on the Prairie. Dallas, our executive producer, already had a long history with Tate, our very talented makeup effects guy out of Oklahoma. And he's perfect for the job. He already has history with them. He gives them what they want. So I just coordinated with Tate all the time because that's what I'm used to doing. Hey, we've got that makeup coming up next Wednesday. Let's do a test on Tuesday. Let's do a dry run through. What do you need from me? How can I help you? You know, so I just continue doing that with Tate and his crew. And I'm sure that's the way it'll be on other films, but many times it's just coordinating with the studio. It might be Stan Winston's studio. It might be there's so many big studios out there, but it's still me with the emails and the phone calls and all that. Hey, we just had a change in schedule. We now need to do that test here. I need five more prosthetics. You know, you're coordinating with those effects people.
A lot of the makeup artists that I work with are just getting their start. Right. These are people that have done a few films, maybe no films. Right. Maybe they've only done beauty makeup and I'm throwing them totally under the bus and saying you got to do wounds and all this stuff. And they're watching YouTube videos. for someone like that, and there's a good chance that they're part of our audience for this podcast, what's some of your advice for getting involved in the industry and just the most important things for them to kind of approach the business with?
I'm asked this all the time. I do, like I mentioned, I do a lot of lecturing on department heading. I have whole sections on how to get in the business, how to work, how to get a job, how to keep a job, how not to get fired from a job, who to contact, you know, social media. You know, the old days it was you'd send your resume out and you'd send cover letters and then you would send out your book photos. Then you'd send out a CD or a small, you know, mini digital version of it. Now, of course, everything's online. Very important for people getting started to have an online presence. I've had several people that approached me at different trade shows and such. Jeff, is there any way I can intern or any way that I can be a production assistant or something for you? And this, I've done this many times in the past. Typically the studio is happy, the production is happy because they only have to pay for insurance for them, a few dollars a day. If they trip stepping out of a makeup trailer, they're not going to sue. You know, you have to have workman's comp. And they get free meals. So it's worked out well that way. But I need to have a place for that person in the trailer. I don't want to say, okay, we're all crowded up now. You who are giving 10 hours a day for free, I want you to go stand out in the 100-degree weather outside the trailer because there's no room for you in here. I need to have a spot for their own dignity and their own, you know, so I don't have to worry about them all the time when I don't have a project for them. I can't just say, go away and come back in an hour. So I've helped people that way. Get out there and hit the street. You want to go to the makeup effects studios. You want to go to the makeup places like Navy's Beauty Supply, Friends Beauty Supply, Cinema Secrets. These are the three big makeup stores in Los Angeles that are filled with people like myself that can hire. Get your face in front of it. Something as simple as when you hand a card out or you send a resume out, have a little snapshot of your face in the top right corner or top left corner so that there's a little bit of a, you know, if I meet somebody at a trade show and they hand me one of 30 cards I'm going to get that day, I have no idea who that person was. If I look, oh yeah, that guy, I remember bumping into him at the lunch line. You know, it gives you a little bit more attachment to that person. So I suggest that. Be the squeaky wheel. I'm a big believer of be a squeaky wheel. And people call me and text me and email me all the time. Jeff, I'm looking for work. What do you suggest? And I always return phone calls. I always return emails. And what I give them the suggestion is, if you're contacting me like this, you should be doing it with a dozen more big name people in Hollywood. And most people won't be as responsive, but one thing I suggest is that when you say, let's say that you're talking to me, you want to work for me, you're an up-and-coming makeup artist, and you can sense that I'm just like, ugh, this is wasting my time. You can say, look at Jeff, how about, I understand you don't have anything now, that's fantastic, you know, I appreciate your time. Are you okay if I reach out to you again in 3 months? Well, 9 out of 10 of these makeup artists are going to go, oh, absolutely, great, yeah, just to get you off the phone. But then when you contact them again in 3 months, you can say, hey, Jeff, remember when we talked last, you said it was okay, I contact you again in 3 months. So you keep the door open and you don't piss the person off, you know, and that's what's so important. There's so many people that have been at the right time and place where I've been able to hire them. It's like, oh, yeah, actually, I do need to hire somebody on this show, and I am coming to your town. And I would love to hire you, or I'd love to see your book, or I'd love to meet with you. So you want to be very, very active. Sending out resumes does nothing. Face-to-face is the best, of course, because then it's the personality, it's the vibe, it's the whole feeling. Like what you and I are doing right now is so much better because we're looking at each other. I'm getting so much more information from the questions you're asking by looking at you than just hearing you. And of course, when we're in person, we have all these other things that are coming across as communication, and people remember that. So try to get in front of the makeup people, the makeup effects studios, go to these different places, Facebook friend them, Instagram, all of that. I have a makeup artist that I've hired many times before she was union. She would send me tons of things having to do with going through school, and I was very impressed with her work. Suddenly, I knew her name, I knew her face, and I knew her work. So when she came out and she got in the union, I said, "You're hired." Because now I knew a lot about her, and I knew that she had passion and hunger and drive. Those are three things that you're going to hear over and over by people in Hollywood that they look for when hiring.
Well, that's all for part one of my conversation with makeup artist Jeff Dawn. In our next episode, Jeff and I will discuss his long career, his collaboration with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and working together on the new Western, Terror on the Prairie. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, and thank you so much for listening.